Welcome to the award-winning Disrupt Education Podcast, a podcast that explores the latest innovations and trends in the world of education. I'm your host, Peter Hostrasser, along with Allie Privet.
We're both educators. Okay, one of us is a former educator, and we were tired of the status quo and wanted to create a space where we could have conversations that aren't always in the public eye. Join us as we talk to other disruptors, educators, researchers, and thought leaders who are pushing the boundaries and challenging the way we were taught.
We're thrilled you're here to be part of a not-so-underground movement to disrupt and amplify the good pieces in education. Whether you're a teacher, a parent, or a lifelong learner, there's a story for everyone on Disrupt Education. We're here each week to bring you stories from all over the globe of people doing education differently.
So buckle your seatbelt, get on the disruptor plane as we climb to altitude before letting this episode free fall straight to your ears.
Hey, it's Peter Hostrasser here. And hey, I want to tell you something about how I am actually disrupting education. Yeah, I'm moving forward with portfolios on spikeview.com. If you head over to spikeview.com, basically what we're teaching our students to do is actually to create a skills-based portfolio around their interests, their passions, and what they're good at. It's called the strength-based approach. So basically what we do is we build up our students and have them understand what they're good at and what they're interested in by the time they leave our high school. But it doesn't stop there. It's a K through gray. So if you want your students to continue to build their strengths in this day and age where resumes are dying, and to show more and more about who they are, what they do, and they actually control all the data behind it, guess what? SpikeView is the place for you. Head over to spikeview.com, check it out. Let me know if you need anything, because I tell you what, I have used this with my own family and my students. Check out spikeview.com today. All right, Uh-oh. Welcome back to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm Peter Hostrasser here with Allie Privet. Allie, how are you?
I'm calfed up. So this is a fun fact for our listeners. Most people will not be on the same side as me, which is fine. But you know what? As people get to know us, they get to know fun facts. So I love the taste of coffee, but hate the effects of caffeine. So I am that person who, like most people say, they drink coffee because of the caffeine, mm-hmm. not because of the taste. I'm the exact opposite. So I'm a decaf girl all the way. I rarely have caffeine. And if I do, it's like a quarter calf. So mm-hmm. my students would always ask like, oh, you know, Privet, do you drink coffee? Like you're always awake first period. And I'm like, no, this is like my normal mm-hmm. you know, energy level. So if I have a little caffeine, which I did this morning, I'm like ready to go.
I can tell there's an energy, and it's a good energy. It's funny because there is different, like coffee is just, it does to me, it tastes well. I do like the effects of caffeine. I don't go overboard though. Some days, like in the winter, I do But I think, you know, we're just jumping right in here. We just talked to Malcolm, who was his own kind of caffeinated self. I would talk about that. Just for those who did not listen last week or missed that one, just go back to that. There is a link to the first episode that I chatted with Malcolm probably 6 years ago, I think. I really loved this recap. It was kind of a recap of Malcolm going through his story. Just somebody who was set on having to go to college, and then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, no. There were so many gems and dropped in his conversation. So, what was one thing that resonated with you, Allie, like right away? Like, what do you got? Because it was good. There's a lot in there.
There's so much in there. So I love a good glow up story, mm-hmm. But also with Malcolm is his resiliency to figure out his own path, despite what, you know, was kind of presented in front of him. Yes, there was like a fun circumstance that happened that kind of forced his hand at a critical moment. He does share that in his episode. So you do wonder, like, what if, you know, the stars had been different? And yet he didn't stay frozen in that things changed and he just kind of figured it out. I do like that he has found this beautiful intersection of things you're good at, and things that work. And he has now molded that. And there's a lot of playfulness in what he does and how he approaches work, which makes sense because he's a creator and he creates things. And I think that's so playful and fun if you allow it. Like, I'm sure I know there's a dark side to creation and being a creator. And, you know, like, he doesn't seem weighed down by it. And that energy really comes across. And I think when you do find your path, despite you know, whatever traditional society, parents, anything gets put upon you, there is a light that you have. And Malcolm has that light. And it was very good to hear a young person talk about their journey. And it's even cooler to see somebody that you talked to on the podcast when it wasn't even a podcast 6 years ago. It was a kind of like now equivalent to what, like YouTube content.
Yeah, like a YouTube channel.
Yeah. So to see that, and just someone making their way in the world in a non-traditional, quote unquote, way, I think is the new way.
It's interesting because I was the one thing that I grabbed from it was when he was talking about school, just I knew how to play the game. I was bored with it. And so as I was talking with him and we were having that conversation, I think one of the things that struck me was that book, the Killing Creativity book, Sir Ken Robinson book that is. I think I have it right around here. I don't know. I have too many books. I've been moving them around. And I started thinking about, does school kill creativity, or do we need to build a mindset to be creative in schools? Yeah, I get it. Like, I hear a lot, and I've heard it over and over and over and over and over from students, is like, we have to do math 4 times and over and over and over and over. And it just gets basically, I mean, for the lack of a better term, boring, right? And maybe somebody's itching to do something, or are we not giving somebody a lot of experiences? Are we missing a lot of reality that we can do some different things? And that's a ginormous question, and it just kind of resurfaced in my thought process of how disrupt education has evolved. And then the things that we talk about, what are the blockers, that what is the low-hanging fruit that we can pull down and just stop doing the same stupid stuff. And then open up smaller windows for students at that age or even before. I don't know, that's what I took from it. So.
I definitely agree that for some youth, I will not say all, a traditional school model is lacking in many areas in terms of creativity or moving them forward. And it can so easily become a sit and get situation based on a lot of compounding variables. But I think about, in particular, I'll talk about public education because that is where I was for a decade. And it's so interesting because I get on regular frequency questions about, well, you're a year out. Tell me what you really think about public education now. You know, like, tell me all the dirty, dark secrets, or how horrible it was, or like, how do you feel about it really? And it's all trying to expose this negative potential arena. And it's interesting because I will defend public school as the traditional model, which we do speak about ways to improve it. I definitely think it needs to be disrupted. We wouldn't be having these conversations if we didn't. That would be really pointless. However, I do think about like the Gabby types, right? We've talked, I think the model, albeit there are areas that it could be improved, that it really worked for her. And now being out of the system is like, there are some students that just are not ready. Their light bulb isn't on. They aren't ready for kind of like what Malcolm was ready for at a young age, or what Patrick was ready for. There are some students that kind of hit this stage where they need more choice. They need more experiences. They don't need the traditional model. But developmentally, we have a range and a scope. And even though it can kill creativity or it can box people in, some people need a rigid structure at that point in time. And so, right, there is this like kind of battle in my mind that like the traditional model, I don't think we need to like totally throw it out for some people at where they're at, that model of a more sit and get, you know, you can call it a factory model, whatnot. Maybe that's what that person needs. But like Malcolm, you know, and others on the podcast have shared, we do need opportunities for internships or getting exposed to more things beyond the traditional classroom walls. I think there can be both. But there's too much of the traditional model and not enough of these other models that we've talked to numerous people about. And so there's this kind of renaissance and building of those other systems that could service a lot of kids who say school is boring. It's sit and get. It's, and even educators that I'm sure are boxed into a system that they themselves wish they could do more, but there's so many layers and red tape and lack of autonomy and standards and objectives and all of the stuff that they have to cover, that they're shackled to where they're at. And so there's so many opportunities for the system to grow. And it often feels like the public education system is super stagnant and it moves so slowly. And if anything, the lowest hanging fruit is just, well, we've always done it. It's working, quote unquote. We don't need to rattle it, shake it. You know, we'll check a box. We'll do this professional development. We'll put forward this initiative. Nothing's really drastically changing. They don't want to, right? I'll keep coming back to this episode in particular because it was so powerful for my own understanding. Gwen Hill's conflict, what is it good for? Absolutely everything. And in order to make real change in any system, you're going to have to embrace conflict that many systems are not prepared to do. So I think public education is good. Student experience is so interesting because some of them will say like, oh, you know, it was horrible, we don't need it. And the others will say, well, like, I really loved it because there's a system for everyone.
Right. I mean, yeah, I like that. I like that explanation because what I think about is, I think about mindset, really. I mean, and maybe that is where, you know, Gwen Hill's conflict is coming in, because you're in conflict with yourself. Maybe you really like school, but no one's really going to say that out loud when you're a teen, right? Like, I really like school, because it's never, ever been the normal thing to say, you know, like, and I think when students come in, I have a kind of a different perspective because I am an elective. I do teach real stuff to students. I do give choice. And for some, it works. Like, you know, when we talked to Gabby and, you know, Patrick, and obviously Malcolm was in one of my courses, in my small business management course. And they take advantage of that, right? They take advantage of the innovative educators that are out there within that system, right? But then there's so many that don't. And I think that's the frustration of a lot of us, because I try to get his kid. So I have a student who is like Malcolm now, who is very, he's like audio visual, like he loves to edit things, and he's like, reminds me of me, like back in the day. And so like when he does a project or a presentation or something for another course, whether it's an English course or, you know, a different marketing course or whatever, I encourage him to use his skill set, right? Like I would have loved to have Malcolm do a podcast about math, right? Like do a podcast about it, right? And I don't think we do that enough. I think there is space in there, but I also think if students would do that, and I know there's a lot of teachers that are encouraging students to do that, but then it comes to a maturity thing as well. And I'm talking about high school, obviously, but you know, I don't want to stick out and make it look like I'm doing more, right? Because I'm not really getting anything out of this, because they're thinking short-term, they're not thinking long-term. So you're right. I think these things are happening out there. I just think that there's such a negative vibe all the time on education that it's so hard to break through that mindset, and that there's a conflict in that. And again, I always go back to learning something, like, you know, you're working out, you want to grow muscle, you have to tear a muscle, right? You tear it. It's hard. It hurts. It's sore. You don't want to do it, but you have to do it. And that's what learning is. And, you know, I think that's the trick, like, you know, and how do you do it for, you know, 16 different personalities in a room when you're trying to match up within 18 weeks or 36 weeks, depending on how far you have them, and you get them for 40 minutes a day and they have 7 or 8 other bosses. I mean, let's be honest. That's, you know, those are the things that I get frustrated with. So,
I mean, right. That model is, it's very challenging for students and also teachers because of what you just said. Like there's a lot of personalities you know, very condensed time frames to pack in a whole lot. And, you know, you're lucky if you have less than 20 personality types in a room to manage and everything, you know. I know that there are plenty of teachers that regularly see 24 to 35 every, you know,
yeah,
50 at more than once an hour, new people in the space. And this, I think one of the most challenging pieces for educators is that it does feel like a constant turnaround of people and things and I mean, the day, I always thought the school day went by super, super fast. As mm-hmm. soon as it started, it was over, because yeah. it's a constant churning. There is no space to like, think, just do. Right.
Yeah, right.
And it's work for teachers and students. Mm-hmm. And that I don't believe is a great model for learning. And there's plenty of opportunities to slow the system down. I think, I don't know if it's fear, I don't know if it's just a lack of trust or what in particular it is, why we have to go at warp speed with learning, right? I don't know.
Right.
And that, right, all 7-8 classes, even if you're taking, you know, there are block schedules and there are different models where, you know, you might be only taking like on a quarter or trimester system, you might only be taking like 3 or 4 classes, and you know, that seems much more manageable. There's pros and cons to all of it, but there is this pace. I think that's what burns out teachers, admin, parents, students from the current model. And then we're in this like really, really intense information age where it's so accessible. It's so at your fingertips. And we've had conversations about AI and technology that, you know, you don't really need to know anything that's quote unquote knowable, because you can Google it, you can chat GPT it, you can put it in any kind of search box and get some answers. But it's more about analyzing that information, synthesizing that information, expanding upon it, thinking about it. And I really do think that, I don't know, this image that keeps coming up in my head is back in the ancient Greek Roman times of people like sauntering about, reading something, and then thinking about it for hours, laying in the grass or under the shade of a tree. And there is this. That people would just have discussions, right? I mean, in my mind, I wasn't there. It seems like a slower pace, you know, you're just like having an afternoon thought discussion, and the slower pace of life. I don't know. I could see so much value in that rather than this warp speed chase that we're currently in.
I agree. If you're going to get down to like the brass tacks of it, let's be honest. Why did Malcolm succeed so far as he has so far? Like, it's been reflection. Like, he has been pausing and seeing what's going right and what's going wrong. And I agree with that. I never liked the way that the schedule of the school day is. And I agree with you. I think bringing people together is good. I think on a going through the pandemic and such, some students were self-learners. It shifted, but not a lot. My daughter needed to be in a place where she was social and, working with teachers face to face and different things like that, which I think is the majority of us. And I just think that, the schedule, though, is just, and again, I'm talking secondary, is just so lightning fast. It's just so lightning fast. And I remember there was an exchange student in my previous school, and he was from Germany. And he showed me his schedule. And on his schedule, it was very collegiate-like. All right. His high school schedule in Germany. And this might not be all across Europe or whatever, but there were huge gaps for lunch. And there was a lot of like internship slash experience time in the afternoon, right? So you hit your classes in the morning. And I know, like, we've talked to Derek and others, especially when we talk about trades and different things like that, where you can go in the morning to a school. And then in the afternoon, you're off into a specialized thing. I like that model. I do like the model of reflection. And again, though, we had the conversation off camera with Malcolm about TikTok. And, again, we both, all of us realized this has a good piece, but it also has a dark side, where it will take away your reflection time. Like, it will literally take away your reflection time. And I think that that is something that needs to be addressed as well. There's your conflict with Gwen. But how do we do that? What do we do? But honestly, yeah, I mean, I know I've come a little bit 180 here, but you're right. I mean, it's not the actual school that kills creativity. I think it's the people who are driving different outcomes, and how fast they're driving outcomes. It's not really about outcomes. It's never been about outcomes. It's been about the journey. And I think that's something that we really learned with Malcolm. I mean, there were seven or eight instances. I don't even know if I can remember that many instances in my own life that were pivotal. I'm sure if I sat around and thought about them, but like, he knew, like, right away at a young age, like, these are pivotable moments, where he started to change, his direction and his learning, because he was learning and failing and doing those types of things, on a consistent basis. And yeah, he didn't go into it, but I can understand, like, one of his co-hosts, that was hard. That's hard when you have to let go of, you know, an early member of a team or somebody leaves. But that's just the way it is. I mean, so, but he's young. I mean, that's just amazing at his age to do that. And I think we can take a lot of those aspects of what he was talking about, those reflection times, and the things that take away from them, and how do we start to implement them into the system that we have. So yeah, you turn me around here a little bit. You know, I'm thinking, all right, you know, sometimes I just get angry and I'm like, you know, but I don't think that's really what we all want. We just want to kind of, okay, what can we do? Small units. And I'll go back just, you know, to finish off my little rant here is, like with Amanda and Propello, she said it straight up. Teachers are the most important thing that students get every day. And that has that to me, even after talking to Malcolm, and, you know, you go back to that episode, that is the thing, right? Like, it, you can control what you do in those 40, 42 minutes, as much as possible, inspire, accountability, partner up, you know, motivate, help students, in whatever subject or area. So I think that's a very key factor, and we need to keep that in mind. So
I also think that part of the reason why you're, you know, quote unquote, turning around in this is because you don't practice education as much as you can in the system that you're in traditionally, yeah. Right? You allow this creativity to be born, which is why you do see some students thrive, mm-hmm. and you see some students who have no idea what to do, because you're like a counterpoint to the norm, yeah. of their days. We've heard that from many students who have been on that have had you as a teacher. And so there, I think for educators listening to this episode, there is takeaways. Like, again, it can feel overwhelming to like, what can I do? Well, if you need ideas, reach out to Peter or myself. I think you probably have done it more in your business classes than I did in my chemistry class, based on kind of where I was at in my own educational journey at the time. It's interesting because I think about like, if I were to go back, or what types of models attract me. And it's not a traditional model. It's definitely more of a collegiate, or a micro school, models that allow for this integration, interdisciplinary type settings, ones where you're connecting what you're learning to, you know, an internship or an outside experience, or you're just getting to explore creativity. And I think what Malcolm did, despite what education system he was in, is that he focused on creating. He calls himself a creator. And I think one of the biggest takeaways from that episode is, for young people, regardless of the system that you're in, is figure out what can you build, what can you create, and that lights you up. How can you take wherever you're at and do it, rather than all this input, what can you output? And that was kind of the discussion that we had off camera with TikTok, is that he uses it for business and to put out content and to create. He's not on it, though he recognizes, and some young people do, how addictive it is. And it's like anything, right? You can become, even at school, you can just be a consumer and not a creator. And so if you can find areas that you can create and build, you're going to find success in whatever system you're in. And even if it will require more work, but you can make that choice. And yeah. We heard that from Patrick, right? He said it pretty bluntly. He was like, mm-hmm. look, it's on you. You decide what you get out of your circumstances. And but again, I do think some people just aren't ready for that at 14, 16, 18, 20. Sometimes, you know, you have that moment later in life, which is fine. But if we can get more students to that point where they want to create and do and build, and allow for that, then we'll have a more successful learning environment at any age range.
Yes. That was well put. I mean, again, salt of the earth over here, eloquent speaker. No, yeah. And I you know what I think great educators do, and this is why it's hard, and this is why we need these conversations. We need support. We need outside, summer times and different things like that, is because we do put a lot on ourselves. We want to hit that 100%. And I was reading a book about a physician who is actually working on a ship, a cruise ship, right? And he like it was it's very interesting. I can't remember the book. I'll put it into the notes. But he was talking about, being a physician. If you're helping others, there's only so much you can do, right? People have to make their decisions on their lifestyles and da 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 da. And I think of teaching as the same way. I think, as an educator, we do not have all the answers. We can try to provide as much as possible. We're not going to get 100%, and it's okay, but just it's not okay to give up when you're in a situation and or a classroom or you're teaching. But it's okay to take time and just, reflect and try to do the best that you can and know that you're not going to get everybody, right? And I think that's also something, just to kind of shoot it back to what you do, is helping others, like really kind of see the bigger picture, right? The coachability of what you do, not just jumping out of airplanes, but the person to person, the person to nature, things that you offer as well. I think that's why this is such a great dynamic team here, talking about the things that we do, because you've seen it in the classroom, and you're providing this outside of the classroom experience. So again, if retreats or anything like that, there you go. You don't all have to jump out of airplanes, but there's amazing land. You have an amazing property for people to just kind of chill and to really connect, and wherever they want to go. So yeah, so there you go. All that came
Well,
from Malcolm.
I mean, I always loved creating in the classroom. And so, when I left, I didn't, and for people who people do ask me about, like, how did you even get to where you're at now? I don't really know, but a series of steps, and it came from this desire to create learning experiences outside of the traditional model. It's kind of evolved as you may have listened to, depending on how long you've listened to the podcast, but school districts and any kind of learning community that wants to kind of have a space to reflect and slow down the pace. Peter and I are always trying to have those types of discussions. And yes, I do help run a retreat center in the Northwoods of Wisconsin that, can host events and spaces for teams, people, educators, students, assuming that you want to kind of reset and you want to create, you want to slow down. And there are spaces besides where I am doing that can kind of cultivate that. And even just, I think about this, the Disrupt Education podcast and the types of conversations that we have, and facilitating those types of conversations with many people. And over time, it's like if you're feeling like a tug wherever you're at in the system to kind of have those conversations in a more directed, facilitated manner, reach out to Peter and I. That's why we have this podcast and have this space. I'm sure in the future we're gonna evolve even more with the kind of what we do here, the Disrupt Education podcast, as we continue to kind of figure out how we can best facilitate more of these discussions that need to be had. More people need to hear these types of thoughts because they're already under the surface, but not everyone's willing to come out and share them. So we're always thankful for our guests that share their very personal experiences and what they see as ways to kind of fix the system or adjust the system or disrupt the system. But it's not always easy to have those conversations. And so I will say, Peter, you had this vision that you didn't even know when you started this. We've had guests say, like, man, if I could take the name of that podcast, I would. Because it's there are plenty of disruptors out there. And if you're feeling like kind of, you know, alone in that, well, we've got a whole network of people doing that work and it's building. And so come join us on the journey and be a creator like Malcolm and Peter. Peter's a creator.
Well, and be patient. We have a lot building. So we're looking at different ways to build more community. You know, we do have a lot of people reaching out, and we're just booked, for this podcast. It gets filled up very quickly. However, again, Allie and I will be, you know, coming into this fall, we'll be putting together some different ways to, maybe connect and do some different things as well. So appreciate you all for listening. Allie, thank you so much for your eloquently put conversation. I am the guy who will be like, yes, you make the conversations fun. You listeners, you make it worthwhile. And we appreciate everyone. Thank you for Allie Privet. I am Peter Hostrasser. Appreciate everyone. We'll catch you next time on the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college, campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.